Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Andrew Millen, and you're listening to the Celtics Old Podcast, and you're very welcome back to the show. Apologies to all the listeners who are looking forward to Tuesday's show. I had a little knock on the head last week, and I had to go for a full MOT to the old doctors, but I'm happy to say that I'm back fighting fit now, and all is good. Just the old blood sugar levels are a bit low. Today, I will be chatting to Linda Carroll, who's one of the Debenham workers who are looking for justice and a fair redundancy. Linda's grandfather was Christopher Duffy, who survived being shot on Bloody Sunday 100 years ago in Croke Park and went on to play for the Dubs and win two Leinster titles. Also joining me will be Mimo Rossi, a Glasgow restaurateur. Before Mimo arrived in Glasgow, he was born and raised in Naples, and he's going to join us to share his memories of the arrival in his hometown of one Diego Maradona, the world's greatest ever footballer, who sadly passed away this week. This episode has been kindly sponsored by Tommy Bourne's Celtic Supporters Club, Portadown. Thanks very much to Declan and Tip McCann and all the club for the continued support of both the fanzine and now the podcast. And folks, if your Celtic Supporters Club or business would like to support the podcast and become a sponsor, please email us at info@celticfanzine.com. And as always, you can contact us through the website or message us on social media. You'll find us on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. Thanks to all the listeners for the continued feedback and suggestions for guests. We have reached out to everyone you suggested. Some are confirmed and will be chatting to us over the next few weeks. Some have got back to us and have passed up on the invitation, and some just didn't bother their ass to reply. As always, folks, these comments and suggestions are what is making the show. Without the listeners, I suppose we wouldn't really have a show. So I suppose it's a listener's podcast now. Like every other Celtic fan, I'm entitled to an opinion, but it's only an opinion, on who should or should not manage Celtic. If you think Neil Lennon should stay or should go, it's for you to decide. But if another fan has opposition to your position, it still should be respected. After last night's performance, the pressure is mounting on the manager and the fans remain split. Neil has the backing of the board for now, but this is a board that haven't released a statement to back him. Neil Lennon has had to take all the pressure on his shoulders. He never sends another coach out to face the media like other managers do. When the COVID crisis hit and all the bullshit that that brought, it was Neil Lennon that faced the media, not a club doctor, not a medic, and certainly not Peter Lawwell. Peter Lawwell has not spoke publicly since Brendan Rodgers left. All we got was a statement on the club website. Peter was very clever. He waited till the fans turned on Brendan Rodgers, till there was enough people calling him a snake and enough people calling him a rat. Then he appeared outside Easter Road, where fans were getting selfies with him. If any fan has a grievance, the grievance should be towards the board. Neil Lennon has not brought in his own coaching staff, and I've said it before, he knew that when he took the job. But what Celtic man is going to turn down the Celtic job? I don't think any Celtic man would. Why is Martin O'Neill having to come out to defend the manager on the back pages? Why is the board not out defending him? Because they're waiting in the long grass. And if Lennon goes, the only way we will see Peter Lawwell is if he appoints a gold star, a Pochettino. Then he'll be out and we'll all think he's a great fella. But if it's Strachan or a manager who has been unsuccessful down in England or a name that is not big, we won't see Peter Lawwell. Anyway, as I said, Neil has the backing of the board for now, but I fear if he drops any points in the league, then his time at Celtic will be up from now till we play Rangers. Celtic are well capable of going unbeaten in December, but it looks like the players have thrown the towel in. The manager hasn't. He's come out again and said he's here for the fight. Just for the record, I'll be backing Neil Lennon until he steps down or he's sacked. I can't imagine him stepping down. Who will ever walk away from that job? And a payday. Don't forget, there's money involved in this. Neil Lennon is a paid employee. If he walks, Peter Lawwell is laughing all the way to the bank. If he stays, he has to be paid off. As a union man all my life, I respect that, Neil. Some of the comments on social media towards Neil Lennon have been bang out of order. Have an opinion by all means. Partake in logical debate. But don't get personal. And don't steal your granny's bed sheets to protest. After another piss-poor performance in Europe last night, the players must have a hard look at themselves. It started so well, with Eddie opening up the scoring, but a mix of shocking defending, failure to cross a ball from set pieces, passing the ball from left to right, with little end product seems to be the story of the season. Add COVID-19 and the Rangers' improvement to the start of the season both domestically and in Europe, and it really is tough watching for us as Celtic fans. All the talk has been of 10 in a row, and I have been guilty of getting caught up in it, but maybe we should concentrate on one game at a time and one competition at a time, starting on Sunday against Ross County. Family, friends and supporters clubs had avoided over Lenny. Is Lenny still the man, or is another manager comes in, is he better? It's a gamble, isn't it? Stick or twist. A new manager or coach may not turn it around. Celtic have come back before. Neil Lennon has come back before. But can he do it this time? We've no international action now till March, which should help us. But we need to bed in the defence. It changes every game. You know, the goalkeepers, who's our number one goalkeeper? We don't know. Taylor and Duffy were blamed for the early errors, but they're not starting now. So who's going to be the new scapegoat? Collectively, the whole team will have to take responsibility and stop believing they are world beaters with ambitions of playing down south or with Europe's elite, and knuckle down. And they need to knuckle down and start showing us and start showing the manager from Sunday that they are here to compete in every game. I was so impressed recently with the Celtic fans and the backing they gave the team in Motherwell, and I hope they continue to back the team. I heard Jason speak on the excellent and entertaining Homeboys podcast recently. He was down the stadium that day. I think it was the Boys Ultra group who were behind it. So well done to all involved. Unfortunately, that didn't make Sky Sports news. Our other group of ultras, the Green Brigade, have released a statement and unveiled a banner outside Celtic Park calling for Neil Lennon to go. I think this may be the first statement of any group of supporters, big or small, on the subject of Lennon staying or going. Although some Celtic fans disagree with the statement, some have backed it on social media. They, the Green Brigade, are entitled to speak on behalf of the small group of Celtic fans they represent and will openly admit that, but they don't speak for anyone else. Whatever your thoughts are on what's going on at Celtic, Peter Lawwell and the board remain silent. I've said it earlier on and I'll say it again, and Neil Lennon has to shoulder everything publicly. It's not a good time at the moment for us, not being able to attend the game to support the team. It's true, we've all had better times, but we've also had worse times following Celtic. Whatever happens, we will go to bed tonight, Celtic fans, and we will wake up in the morning, Celtic fans. My first guest today is Linda Carroll. She's one of the Debenham workers who are looking for justice and a fair redundancy for the workers who were laid off overnight. She is also the granddaughter of Christopher Duffy, who survived being shot on Bloody Sunday 100 years ago in Croke Park and went on to play for Dublin, winning two Leinster titles. Linda, you're very welcome to the Celtic Soul podcast.
Thank you, Andrew.
It was by listeners' power. Listeners asked me to get someone on from the workers after we gave us a shout out on Friday. So it's great that the listeners have such a contribution. Now, Linda, we're all going through COVID-19, but you also lost your job and you have to deal with that.
Yes.
I know you have a fight on your hands with the rest of your co-workers to try and get a redundancy payment for years and years of service.
That's right. Yeah, we got a generic email in April to say that we were being let go, although we'd been told in March when England went into examinership that our jobs were okay. So we were let go in March because of the COVID, but then we got the generic email in April to say that our jobs were gone.
So just take me back. COVID comes in. Were you used on the COVID payment because the shop was closed?
Yes, we were.
And then the whole lot of you got an email, as you say, generic email. So this was one that went out to say you had no job.
The job was gone. That was closing down. The job was gone, yes. We had been told in March when England went into examinership that our jobs are fine. And then we get this email. No telephone call, just a generic email.
And were the union notified?
Yes, as far as I know, they were. Yes.
So the union had been notified, the workers had been notified. And what did it tell you, like, you're not entitled to any payment, the place is closing?
Yeah, said that we'd be only entitled to statutory redundancy, which is 2 weeks for every year. But when, back in 2016, when the last redundancy came about, there was a pledge that if it ever happened again, that we would be given 2 weeks plus two. That's what we're fighting for, the 2 weeks. But Debenhams have just walked away. KPMG are our liquidator, and they've just said there's nothing there for us, that we were last on the list.
Well, Linda, I've been made redundant. I was made redundant, and I remember the union going in and negotiating the package, and we got quite a good package. I know 2 weeks isn't much to ask for.
No, because the last, redundancy, the people got 6 weeks.
Yeah, which would be quite standard.
Yeah.
You really have been treated unbelievably, and the way it has been done, and the cold and callous way.
Yes.
Once you're told your job is safe, go home, come back from COVID, yep. You're told, you basically wake up and told, sorry, you can deal with COVID, but you've no job to come back to. And go and ask the government for a couple of quid because we've given you, we'll be giving you nothing.
Nothing, no. And then we did eventually get a meeting with KPMG and the union, and we were offered $1 million, which is between 987 people. So, like, it, you know, people would be getting between 200 and 600, you know, for, you know, as a redundancy from Debenhams.
Yeah, and it sounds a lot, doesn't it? Oh, we offered them $1 million.
Yeah, yeah.
When, when you break it down, it's little or nothing.
Yeah. It's 987 people across the 11 stores.
Yeah, and like, and the, as I said, look, we gave a shout out on the podcast on Friday, and we had George McCluskey on that, and we got a lot of supportive messages and comments from people, and indeed from your fellow workers. But it was the listeners that said, you know, can you get someone on the show? And then someone suggested it, and here you are. Can you take us back from your time working with the company and just paint a picture for the listeners? Because when I was a kid, I believe Debenhams took over Roacher Stores.
That's right. I was an old Roacher Stores worker, and they took us over in 2006. And I was actually working in Debenhams, or in, sorry, Roachers.
Yeah, because when I was a kid, it was a big thing to go up to Dublin from the country.
Oh, it was.
With your mum and see the Christmas lights and maybe see Santa Claus. I always remember going into Roacher Stores, and we would, you know, we'd get kitted out between there and some of the other big shops that wouldn't be down the country. So, like, it's been kind of part of Dublin. So many things now that just seem to be, you watch the side now, you know, it just seems to be a different Dublin than when I was growing up.
I mean, in Roacher Stores, you could get everything. You could go down to the basement, you know, you could buy everything down there, from a knitting needle to your Christmas decorations. It was a great store. Then Debenhams took over, they renovated it. So, you know, it changed.
And you say, like, what was it like to walk in Debenhams?
Well, I was in the offices. They were okay. They were okay to work for.
I suppose, you know, your fellow workers, the union reps, you weren't aware of it because you were told your job is safe. And then this bombshell strikes and basically you're no longer required. Yes. A lot of the workers have been there. Some of them have been there for 30 years. Is that correct?
Yeah, 30. That's with, you know, they were in Roachers first and then they went, Debenhams took over then. So that's counting their time in Roachers as well.
Sorry, Linda, they would be... No, they wouldn't be young. 30 years service, you know, depending on where you've been. So there's no one young. So am I right in saying there's people now in their 60s?
Well, I'm actually in my 60s. I would have been one of the older group. Yes, yes.
So instead of looking forward to retirement, you're now on the picket line trying
to
get 2 weeks for every year service. Am I correct?
That's right. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying to myself. You know, I'll finish my, you know, my career in Debenhams and retire from Debenhams. You know what I'm saying? So it was very disappointed.
But some of these workers are too young to get a further pension, okay? You know, too young for the old age pension. And basically too old to get a job. And I'm not being ageist here. Realistically, no one's going to take on someone.
That's 40 or 50, 50s, yeah.
As the years go on, it's harder to get employed. But from a personal point of view, when you found out, how did you feel, and how did the other workers feel when you start talking to them?
They were devastated because a lot of the younger girls would have mortgages, and they're saying, "How are we going to, you know, survive now because no job?" And they were all so disappointed. And then when we heard that, you know, we were getting nothing, you know, a lot of anger, a lot of, you know, your girls there for 30 years working there, you know, giving everything. And 5 years ago, we gave up, you know the way you get a rise every year? We did that to help Debenhams because they weren't doing very well. So we helped them along then. And look what they did to us then. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but Debenhams are still trading.
That's right, in England. That's right. And, you know, they've made 30 million since the COVID close on our website, you know, on the Dublin Ireland website.
Wow.
Oh, you know what I mean? So they said it's theirs now, but that's ours. Dublin, Ireland.ie, Debenhams.ie, which was the Irish, you know, website.
If many workers are affected and many shops that they operate?
987 workers over 11 stores.
Throughout the country?
Throughout the country, yeah.
Like, mental health is a huge thing at the moment. It's on everyone's agenda. People are talking about it. You know, has there been any supports there it's one thing not giving people money and telling them no job, but have they put any supports in place for you?
No, nothing. No.
But they've just washed their hands of witches.
They wash their hands of us, yes. So they're reading that this, you just walk away completely. Yeah.
It's just, you know, it just seems to be a sign of maybe things to come. And I think people should really get behind us, because if you don't win this, the people, the companies, with big companies with plenty of millions in the bank will just roll over the workers.
Yeah, they think they can do the same, just walk away. Do you know what I mean? Like we want to set a precedent, for other workers that won't happen to them. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, of course. Where does the current government stand on this, or has the past government or ministers, you know, has there been any support, or where's their stance on this?
Well, you know, like the Duffy Cahill report was after Cleary's, and the Duffy Cahill report was, you know, supposed to be passed in government, but it never was. It was to protect anybody that which was made redundant, you know what I mean? But it was never passed. So we're trying to get that passed. Only last week, Micheál Martin, you know, our Taoiseach, held a meeting with us, you know, because he wants to, you know, try and mediate. So he's going to get a mediator for us now to see if they can do anything at all, you know what I mean, which I don't think they will, but at least he's coming, you know, he's doing something now.
Are we 8 months into this?
But yeah, 8 months now, yeah. And KPMG tried to, last night in Tralee and Limerick, try to get some stock out, but they were stopped by our workers. 3:30 this morning, and they tried, and then 7:00 in Tralee, but we stopped them, thank God.
Well, well done. And yeah. Just tell us about you're picketing 24 hours a day, and the reason we're picketing is because we'll strip the shops of millions of pounds worth of stock.
Yeah, about 20 million in the shops. So, like, that's our money. You know, we're only looking for 10 million to cover us all.
Yeah.
So that's our. And, so we would go, you know, we'd pick it from 6 in the morning to 6 the following morning, you know, 6-hour shifts. I would usually do the 6 o'clock shift because I'm quite near. So I would set out about 5:15 and I would stay there for 6 hours.
Going back to the early 70s, my father would have been on the picket line with Irish Cement, and they got all the workers' rights then. They won the strike. But since then, that's another factory that is only a remnant of the company my dad left when he did get a decent pension from it and stuff like that. And it just seems to me that now, you know, it's a race to the bottom in this country.
Oh, big time, big time. They've just walked away. You know, they don't want to know us. You know, but very bad on their part, really. To be honest, you know.
Yeah, it's just like it seems like, you know, for the workers to be going out and. Like, the only way we can support is by boycotting their online shop. Is that correct?
That's what we're doing at the moment. We had a launch there at the Darling last Tuesday to boycott the online service.
Because, like, people can't show you, like, they can't really support you any other way because they can't go on the picket with you because we've got COVID and people have to be careful.
Yeah.
So this is a way of, so all the listeners, and please spread the word. You know, if you agree with what the Debenham and Workers are doing and what they're owed and the profits that this company is making, boycott Debenham's online. So that's Debenham's.ie.
Yes.
And in the UK, then it'd be co.uk. So we've got a lot of listeners in the UK as well. So
Yes.
And there has been support coming in. And it's only kind of been recently that it's been highlighted, because I've seen members of the Communards, the Farm and the Happy Mondays have all sent videos.
I see with that force, yeah. Brilliant.
Of solidarity, and I believe a couple of footballers are going to get involved as well now, which is
great. We need that support, you know what I mean?
I got, like, when you think you're Dublin, I wonder what Jim Larkin and James Connolly would make of the lack of support from the government for 8 months.
8 months, yeah.
It's taken them 8 months, you know, to get
Do you know what I mean? They tried to fob us off thinking that we wouldn't continue, but you know, we're fighting for our rights, really.
Yeah, you know? And they're going to continue to.
Oh, we're going to continue. We'll probably be there Christmas Day having our dinner.
Which is unfair. And I read an article on I think it was the Cork Examiner, but one of the girls been on the picket line and she's pregnant. This is what she has to do to try and get secure a future. And as you said, there's people with mortgages, big mortgages.
Yeah, in their 40s, 50s, you know, paying off mortgages. Now, like, what can they do? It's going to be very hard for them to get a job. So,
And the banks won't care, you know?
No, they won't. They won't, definitely not. It's all wrong.
Now, listen, I'm going to move on because
Yeah.
On Saturday evening, after watching my team, Celtic, play a 2-2 draw out with Hibs, I switched over to watch the Dublin Meath game. Leinster final, the Dubs were outstanding. I felt sorry for Meath, and I'm a loud man, but I did feel sorry for them. The Dubs are just so far ahead. But there was tributes paid by the GAA to the 14 innocent people who were murdered in Croke Park on Bloody Sunday, you know, 100 years ago. Your grandfather, Christopher Duffy, was 15 on that day, and he was shot at the game. He was there to watch Dublin and Tipperary. But thankfully, he survived.
He did.
Can you tell us a little bit about your grandfather?
Yeah, well, my granddad, I was brought up with my granddad as well. He came from Sheriff Street, and he loved football. You know, he'd rather play football than go to school. So on that day, he went to the match. He was 15, and he was actually shot at the top of his neck, just above his spine. Very lucky he was seriously injured. Very lucky to survive, but he did. But he was always wanted to get into football. And it was, you know, the thing we were so proud of is that he actually did play for Dublin, and he was shot in Croke Park. You know what I mean? So it was.
So he played in Dublin, and he won two Leinster titles, and he played in that stadium where he was shot.
Yes.
It's an amazing story. And I know there's a YouTube by your brother, and is he your nephew?
My son.
And I'll put a link up to that when we put the podcast out as well.
Brilliant. That would explain everything, kind of. Do you know what I mean? Yeah.
So, Linda, where did the Devon and Walkers go from here?
Well, we're just hoping that Micheál Martin will be able to do something for us. But if not, we're going to keep on picketing, you know. But you see, like, the COVID, you know, the level 5 is over now on Monday. So KPMG will probably pounce on us now. So we have to be aware, and we're going to still pick it. But hopefully, we're hoping that Micheál Martin will step in and get something for us.
And Linda, is there anyone, okay, we know the union is there for you. Is there anyone, other politicians, lobbying the government on your
behalf? Independents, really. You know what I mean? Robert Boyd Barish and Bree Smith. Because the independents are, you know, trying to, you know, but none of the Fine Gael or Fine Gael or the Fianna Fáil, I'm assuming Fáil is behind us as well. So we have a few lobbying for us, all right.
So at least you've someone on the opposition benches anyway.
Oh, yeah. Mick Barry, he's brilliant. You know what I mean? They talk nearly about us every day, but only now Micheál is starting to step in. So hopefully something will be done now.
Hopefully it'll be done. And I think if they can feel the effect on the online sales, maybe they will do something for you.
Maybe they will, hopefully.
But the fact that they haven't sat over the table, which is probably the worst thing about it, because they're just carrying on with their lives while you are all
sitting.
So just a little bit of justice and a little bit of watch your road.
That's right. Definitely.
Linda, thank you so much for coming on the podcast and sharing your story with us and sharing the plight of the Devon and Walkers. And we hope you do get justice, because you deserve it after all these years of service. And I hope that there's not too many more hours in the picket line. But I do admire you. And hopefully you will get sorted, and maybe you can come back on the podcast and let the listeners know and maybe thank them.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Andrew, for listening to me and putting our plight out there. So we're just saying boycott Devon's online.
We will be. And I'm sure all the listeners will, because it was the listeners that asked to get you on here. So
thank you very much. Thank you so much. We appreciate all your support.
Thanks very much, Linda, for coming on the podcast. After we gave them a shout out on last week's podcast, listeners got in contact and said, you know, can we do something for these people? Can we get them on to hear the story? So much appreciated, Linda. And now, all we have to do now is boycott Debenhams online, folks, and support Linda and her fellow workers. Tens of millions in the bank, and they refuse to negotiate with the workers who gave them years of service. If they're allowed to get away with this, then companies will continue to exploit its workers. My next guest on the show today will be Mimo Rossi, who witnessed the world's greatest ever player play for his hometown. What a buzz it must have been when Maradona landed in Naples, a team that had never won the league. And all the success he brought to the club. A hero on and off the park to so many. A genius.
Mimo, you're very welcome to the Celtic Soul podcast. Before we chat about Diego, life in lockdown, No selling to go to see in Glasgow. And what's happening with one of Glasgow's finest Italian restaurants, Bella Vita?
Oh, it's things are tough at the moment for the whole catering industry. We have obviously we've been shut down for the last last week and for the next 2 weeks. All business is not doing great, you know. So the whole catering industry in general is not doing well. So we'll see what happens in the next 3 weeks. But we're finding it very tough here in Glasgow, and the whole industry.
Mimo, can you tell us a little about Naples, just to paint the picture for where Maradona was going to arrive from? He was coming from Barcelona. Is it a tough town? Is it a mafia town? You know, what was Diego coming into?
Well, I remember very well. I was only a young boy. I was 14 at the time, 14, 15 years old. We all already idolized. It was our idol already when he was at Barcelona. So Maradona, for all the kids, it was the name for everybody to shout when we were playing football. So it was like this big hero already. So when we heard the news that it was a possibility of him to come to Napoli, it was like people shocked. They were almost shocked out to hear him coming to Naples, as much now we're shocked to hear him of his passing. So that was like, you know, seriously, it was the usual, you know, unbelievable news to hear. Then a great, great player like him came to a town and a club like Napoli, which at the time it was not very wealthy at all. It was no money. It was no the town. The around the stadium was high poverty. High unemployment, and it was just basically a dream come true for everybody. So as I said before, as kids, it was like we were astonished to receive the news of Maradona signed for Napoli, you know. And at that point, we all start to dream already about all the things that we could possibly do and achieve with a player like that, you know. And we were dreaming about possibly our first Scudetto to win for Italy, in Italy. So it was like we may be going to reach that, you know, point that we're actually going to win something with a player of that name. So we did. Eventually we did. He brought us, in, I think it was 1987, the first Scudetto. Then we won. Prior to that, we came second in the league with Napoli, and we were already the talk of the nation. That a small, you know, it was a small club, but it was never a club that they achieved much. So we were always the underdogs, as you want to call it. And with Maradona, it just took us to the next level, and We were all at the stadium as kids. I remember I used to go, even if I didn't have tickets, hoping for go with an older man, which had a pass of like I used to go with these people that went to war. They had these special passes, but they had they could take somebody with them as a next. To help them, because obviously they were war heroes, war people, so they had disability and so on. So we were allowed. So we were looking for the old guy with a stick to try to say, "Can you take me in with you? I'll be your helper today." So that was the days of me going to São Paulo and watching Napoli play the game that we all loved in Italy. The game we always played in the street, every street corner. We played with anything. It looked like a ball. We were just kids kicking a ball constantly. There was no computers. There was no phones. There was no technology. All we had, it was football. So,
can you remember when the day Maradona arrived and signed as a Napoli player? Have you memories of that day?
I remember clearly. I was working with my uncle at the time, and we were doing some gardening. I was helping to get the gardening, and the radio was on like every afternoon, and listened to the radio, and we heard the news. The first thing we done, we all jumped into the car and went to the street of Naples and pepping the horns like you usually see scenery like that when Italy wins a game in the World Cup on the major tournaments. Then we all go in the street with the flags. And so we were all in the street of Naples with people already selling Maradona's faces on the scarves and stuff. We were all just joyous to wait for this great player to come through. And I was actually at the stadium when you arrived by helicopter. I was not in the stadium, but I was outside the stadium, so we could get glimpses of things to what I remember of this great day. We went and watched later on TV about, you know, what he did when he actually arrived into the São Paulo Stadium and kicked a ball for a wee well, and the stadium was absolutely jam-packed already of people cheering for him, you know. So that was the day of his arrival, and there was just a massive joy for the whole town of Naples. It was, as I said, we were just celebrating as Italy won the World Cup almost, you know. So that was the memory of when he arrived in Napoli, you know.
So the football god arrived in Naples. Out of the sky, and you're a teenager, and he comes down onto the pitch. It's like sort of out of Bible, like the football Bible.
Oh, it was like, seriously, I know stories about people, which is not very good to hear, but people having less food on the table to make the money for the tickets to go and watch the game.
Wow.
No matter how much you earned, you were trying to save that little to support the club, to support the... But it was not so much even support the club. You just wanted to go and see the show. Yeah. Maradona, it was like a show. We used to arrive hours before because we knew he would come out on the pitch. That was when I was a little bit older, a few years later, when I could afford to buy my own ticket. And I was there all the time. And I remember so clearly go to the stadium with my cousins, my brother, and we had pieces of papers in our hand. We cut it in small pieces that we used to throw in a bag to make like confettis to throw when the team came out. We spent hours doing these confettis, but the entertainment of that, it was him coming onto the pitch and warming up. And that was the show. That was like, you know, we were just waiting for him to do that. We knew he would do it. He came to the stadium earlier to his warm-up. It was just an entertainment for all the kids. And he knew we were there, and he knew he'd done it. He got cheered for it. The most things that astonished me at that time, it was actually players that they played with him, Ciro Ferrara and so many other ones that they played with him. And they didn't mind. They didn't mind that Maradona kind of took all the attention, and they were like little kids themselves, and they were at this honor to actually play with such a player. Then even if he took on the show all the time, they didn't bother. It didn't bother them. They were always happy, always friendly. It was the team bond. It was amazing. It was all down to one person.
The listeners won't be able to see. I can see you now, Mimo, and the passion that you're speaking about, and the excitement in your eyes, like. Yeah. You're that teenage boy again.
Yes. Oh, since the news, it's all brought back to me a lot of memories that I done a phone video call with my dad and my mom straight away as soon as I heard the news. And I'm not joking, I swear, it was like talking to your parents about somebody very close to you just passed away, and they were all in tears. And then I start to get tears in my eyes just by watching them being in tears. And my mom and dad, they're in their 74 now, the two of them. So they were just because they were a lot younger then, obviously, but they were the one joy and have all the celebration with us kids with Napoli. So even your mum, and they were singing songs about Maradona, and it was always a family thing. It was always waiting. If I didn't go to the stadium, it was at the house waiting. We had our lunch, the Sunday lunch, and then we're all at the front of the TV. Again, put the TV on earlier just to watch his warming up and waiting for the game to start. So it was just a family unification, if you want to call it. I remember my dad used to say, we go and pray God in a Sunday morning. We went to church to Mass. And then they said, now we're going to pray the other God. We're going to go to Maradona. So that was the truth, you know, about this magnificent person that he was. So unified family, you know.
Yeah, and like it just seems that the working class people in the city. Now they had a working class hero because Maradona could relate with the people because he'd come from the streets. He didn't have a silver spoon.
No, it's obviously Argentina. We feel very very close to, especially Napolitan people. They feel close to the way of living in Argentina. Of, you know, a lot of we resemble in a lot of things. Kind of, you know, obviously things have changed now, but we used to be kind of the same kind of street people, living the same ways and the same of drying clothes in outside and in the middle of the street. And the pictures of Argentina and Napoli, they were very, very similar. And Maradona always said that he always felt Napoli is his home. He felt at home because the similarity of the city with his hometown. I mean, I just heard my dad today saying about the Pope, which obviously is Argentinian, and he's made a massive praise to Maradona. He will never come to Italy without going to see him in the last few years. And he showed all this memorabilia of a great player than the Pope kept through the years since he was, you know, a cardinal in Argentina. So he cherished all this memorabilia from a player. And he also said that when Maradona came to see him, Rome had to wait. The Pope, it was busy to see him. So that's something to give you an idea how much he was respected, regardless of his downfall, of his demons, if you want to call it, that he had, which we all know he did. He was just a great, great man. He was a great, great person.
He was a flawed genius, but he was a genius.
The football is the football is. I think we'll be talking about him for years to come,
forever,
because obviously my son Gianmarco yesterday made a video about Maradona, and my son is 13 years old. Up to a few years ago, he didn't have a clue about Maradona, you know. So he sent me a text straight after he heard the news, and my daughter as well, Sophia, and my other daughter, Jessica, they're all on the text straight away. Dad, Maradona is dead, you know, very upset themselves, you know. So, and that's the new generation. So I know for a fact that his name was never going to end, and his legacy will never end for year and year to come.
He won two leagues. He won the UEFA Cup. He won the Italian Cup. Yeah. He won the Italian Super Cup. With a team that had, you know, little success.
We achieved nothing since he left. So, as you know, we went close to things. We're a good club now. People with the brought a lot of money into the club, but we still with all the money, with all the big superstar, we haven't achieved anything. We achieved so much by just one man in the team than we never achieved in the last 10, 12 years with loads of money into the club.
Yeah.
So that rests my case. That's all I can say. I know people say it's not fair to have a one-man team. He was a one-man team. And the players, they like to have him as a one-man team. All they have to do is be his teammates and be with him when he needed him. And he could virtually win the game single-handed.
He was kicked around every pitch he ever played.
Everywhere. Another good thing about Maradona, what I remember very, very distinctly, very well, every stadium in Italy, Serie A, could not wait for Napoli to go to their stadium because he brought them money. He brought loads of money to the club that we were playing against because the stadiums were guaranteed to be full. He was loved everywhere. No matter he played for Napoli, he was loved everywhere, you know?
Yeah, even he came as a young boy to Dublin in 1980 and he set up the goal and people are talking about it on Irish television. One of the lads, Johnny, contacted me last night. He was at his last game for Argentina against Greece in the World Cup. People saw him when he played for the rest of the world against the English League. So, everyone is clamouring for a memory now of Maradona. I'm lucky. I have a signed shirt by Maradona and it hangs over my son's bed. So, that's my little piece of history. But he was a hero off the pitch in Naples as well. He had the freedom of the city in Naples.
Yes. Still has, you know. Maradona, no matter what, when he went back to Italy, obviously his first stop was in Naples. He was invited to many shows, TV shows and things like that. But his main and first stop was always Naples, all the time. I remember when we went to work, the European Cup in 1988, I was serving the country. I was serving the national service. I was in the army, and we were in the barrack. And I remember then, maybe because it was a barrack, you feel that patriotic. And no matter where you came from, and that in the barrack, it was people came from everywhere in Italy, Sardinia, Milan, Turin, you name it. We were all celebrating together. Napoli went, but Italy went at the same time. To the Italian people, it was an achievement, you know, for the whole country. I remember so clearly we were singing the national anthem in the barrack, watching the final of Napoli winning the Europa League. It was the UEFA League, the Europa League. Yeah, another great memory, you know.
As you said, they've won nothing since and they spent money and this was the golden era for Napoli. He's gone now, Maradona. He's gone to, you know, if there's a football heaven, he's sitting at the top. We're going to be watching videos and we're going to be getting the books out again and we're going to be reading them because his legacy will never die, you know, and not just Napoli fans or Argentinian fans, football fans throughout the world. Maradona is gone. But his memory will live on forever in the hearts and minds of football fans everywhere. No more than so in his homeland of Argentina. But in Naples, the murals will still be up and the fan stories will still be told.
For years to come, my kids, hopefully they'll tell their kids. My son, as I said, he's been since yesterday. He's been asking about stories. We've been watching videos on the phone. He was absolutely astonished to watch the second goal against England. He took four men on his own. He said, yes, he did. And he scored. And then he watched the first goal, which was the famous hand of God. He said, that's actually with his hand. I said, I know. That's right. Hey, maybe Scotland is a massive hero in England. I don't know. I'm not too sure. But Maradona had a great respect for Scotland. No, don't know about in England so much. And But definitely, he loved the Scottish people up here because they knew they loved them for the hand of God. Probably yourself as well in Ireland.
We
definitely did, you know. So
you know, anyone that plays England, you know, it's a tribal thing.
It was definitely so that the stories will be many. So I'm sure that the legacy will be continuing and the legacy will be told.
And of course, he was in Celtic Park, and there's the picture of him with the jersey. And
yep,
my memory of him, and it won't be a goal, it will be him warming up to Life is Life. That video is just, I've got a friend, Baz, and every couple of weeks, that video, when we get a few drinks on us, that video comes out on the phone, and we look at him, and because he loved him too. But look, Mamo, it's been a pleasure to chat to you, and just to get a fan story who witnessed his greatness, played for Napoli, and to go to a place like Naples, which, you know, it was brilliant to, you know, to hear he arrived in a helicopter.
Yeah,
and listen, I can't wait to get back to Glasgow to watch our team Celtic, and
yes,
of course, I can't wait to get back into Bella Vita for a good Italian feed. Hopefully, we'll get this vaccine sorted and we get back over to Glasgow soon.
Yeah, nice to see you, my friend. You take care.
Thank you, pal.
Ciao.
Thanks very much, Mimo, for taking time out to talk to us. Absolutely brilliant to get the view of that teenage boy back in Naples when the great one arrived. Maradona, no doubt, his legacy will live on forever. The memories we all have of him, not just of that wonderful goal against England, but of everything he stood for off the pitch. He was with the working class all the way. He came from nothing. And I think we all can agree, he partied a lot. But then again, who wouldn't if you were Maradona? As always, folks, thanks very much to everyone who bought the latest issue of More Than 90 Minutes, issue 111. Without your support, we wouldn't be able to get the print edition done with no ground sales. So, as always, thank you so much. And thanks to everyone who subscribed as well. We've seen a big increase in subscriptions since we started the podcast. And obviously, we can't drop the fanzine off in the shops now. So, that's helping us. So, once again, thank you so much. I think I've said thank you so much too many times. So, folks, if you want to subscribe before now on Christmas, we'll stick a free T-shirt in. All artists that come in before noon get posted the same day. But allow a few extra days, folks, for the post, because the postal workers, they're under severe pressure, and I think some deliveries are a bit a week behind, or so I'm told. But don't let that stop you visiting our online shop for T-shirts and merchandise, because every penny we make out of that goes back into producing this podcast and putting the fanzine on the street. As always, my long-suffering producer, I have to thank Ronan McQuillan. Still hasn't sung us a song, but sure, look, he puts up with me ranting day in, day out of a Celtic. So, folks, if you like what we're doing and you would like to support us, you can do so by visiting CelticFanzine.com, where you can become a member, subscribe, buy, or make a donation for the price of a pint. And I thank everyone who has. We promise no one wants Google type adverts on our website or in our articles, and no one wanted advert interruptions on our podcast. Someone asked me recently, why do we do this? Can you imagine if we had a sponsor on board, one of these that just put any advert out? We could have one for Debenhams and us for the Debenham workers on. But that's just one of the reasons. We want to try and keep it real. We want to try and keep it independent. And your support means we can continue to produce quality independent fan journalism, podcasts, and we will be starting our video content again once level 5 restrictions are removed. And once we get back to level 2, we can open up the office then and get the rest of the team in and get some guests in as well for chats. So, folks, if you're not in a position to financially support us at this time, don't worry. We'll still deliver the same quality content to all fans for free. Another thing that is free is our app. So please download it and you'll have access to all the podcasts, articles, daily news, video, events, and of course the fanzine on our online shop, or the touch of a button on your phone or tablet. All episodes of the podcast are now available on all platforms. So don't forget to hit the subscribe or follow buttons and you'll never miss an episode. You can also go straight into Spotify for my Instagram story. And that reminds me, don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. Give us a follow and give us a comment. Thanks again to our episode sponsors, Tommy Bourne, Celtic Supporters Club, Porter Down, for their continued support, the fanzine and the podcast. As we said earlier, if your business or Celtic Supporters Club would like to support the podcast and become a sponsor, you can email us at info@celticfanzine.com, or you can contact us through social media or message us on the website. Keep all the comments and suggestions coming in, and here's a few from last week's podcast. Celtic Soul Podcast, Finally got around to listen to a few of these ones. Good quality and engaging too. Thumbs up from me, Joe Blog City on Twitter. George McCluskey, Sunday morning run after frustrating result with Celtic AM and hearing some great stories with the fans, with the fan who lived the dream, scoring a goal in the cup final and a winner against them, Rory on Twitter. Just listen to the George McCluskey interview, complete class. I was aged 13 in 1980 and my old man took me to the game, and when the trouble erupted at the end, he grabbed me and we ran all the way up the steps and outside Hampden. Alan MacDonald, Glasgow. George McCluskey, another great podcast to pass the time on a Sunday stroll. It was great to meet George while enjoying a cold Corona along the Las Vegas Strip at last year's convention. Seems a million miles away now. Keep them coming, Andrew. And that's from Ryan in Belfast. George McCluskey, brilliant episode, Andrew. Kieran Bell, Bettystown. Celtic Soul with George McCluskey, my first cup final involved in Celtic. And get it right up ya. And that comes from Celtic Ra, 9 in a row, Twitter. Another cracking interview, some fantastic stories. The memories of Kane Dalglish, better than Johan Cruyff according to George McCluskey, and Jinky, and rightly praising James Forrest. The amusing tales of his outfit of being drunk on the whiskey after the 4-2 win over the Huns, which clinched the title when there were 4,000 people in the dressing room, and his dad was also in there. The 1980 Cup Final riot win over the Huns, when he called the police officer a blue nose, but was grateful at the end when that police officer got him off the pitch. Whatever happened to George's prized possession, the Cruyff shirt, which was got burned? I'm still wondering. Wonderful stuff. And that comes in from Tony in Sunderland, who's a regular listener and who regularly comments. Thanks for the shout out to the Devon and Walkers. Much appreciated, pal. Hail, hail. Declan Maher. Driving down from Belfast, listening to the Celtic Soul podcast. Liam Cross. George Mack was top class. Lovely fellow, underappreciated. Hilly, St. Margaret's Celtic Supporters Club. Podcasts have been excellent. Keep them coming. Mark Hennigan, Glasgow. We'll be back with another episode on Tuesday. No doubt Neil Lennon, Ross County at home will be discussed when we get back talking Celtic. So enjoy the weekend, folks. The pressure is on Lenny and the players on Sunday. Prague was a disaster. When I think back to the last time I was in Prague with Celtic, it was en route to Tbilisi for the UEFA Cup game back in, I think, 2004. We won that night in the freezing cold, which made the trip back a happy one. I can't imagine Lenny, the players and the backroom staff enjoyed the trip home last night. We now have till March with no international breaks. Hopefully by then a vaccine will be in play and fans may start returning to the stadium. The next month or so will determine if Neil Lennon will be manager come the end of the season or even come the end of the year. The team now need to go on a run in Scotland. One game at a time, one competition at a time. We want to lend our support to musicians and songwriters out there who have been hit the hardest by the lockdown restrictions, with no gigs and no venues. So send your material to us and we'll give you a plug and we play you out of each show. Today we go back to the time the Blarney Pilgrims were live in the Mean Fiddler in Dublin. They recorded that night marching down Sackville Street on Easter Sunday. Visit Internationale Records on Facebook for more details. The album is now available on Spotify, iTunes, Apple Music and Amazon Music. Here is their adaptation of Woody Guthrie's This Land Is Your Land. So folks, all I have to say now is stay tuned, stay safe, and as always, keep the faith and up the Blarneys.
This land is your land, this land is my land, from the northern highlands to the western islands, from the hills of Kerry to the streets of Derry. All this land was made for you and me. As I went walking by the Shannon waters, hand in hand with my little daughter, heard the church bells ringing and the children singing. All this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from the northern highlands to the western islands, from the hills of Kerry to the streets of Derry. All this land was made for you and me.
This land is your land, this land is my land. From the northern highlands to the western islands, from the hills of Kerry to the streets of Derry, all this land was made for you and me. Then I climbed the mountain, saw a crystal fountain, and I heard the great roar from the rocky seashore. And her eyes were gleaming when she said, oh daddy, all this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land. From the northern highlands to the western islands, from the hills of Kerry to the streets of Derby, all this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land. From the northern highlands to the western islands, from the hills of Kerry to the streets of Derry, all this land was made for you and me. And I walked her home by the village steeple, proud of my country, proud of my people, of the men who tried there and the men who died there, singing this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land. From the northern highlands to the western islands, from the hills of Kerry to the streets of Derry, all this land was made for you and me.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.